The workday is done. Social media is heating up.
Ding, ding, boys. School's in session.
Welcome to Sports Talk with Personality. You riding with us?
Yes.
Great. Coming to argue?
That's a given. That's a given.
Even better.
Let's get the show going.
Clock out. Crank up.
People got the popcorn. Let's give them a show.
The drive starts now on WSJS.
Oh, yeah. It's a Friday drive. Good to have you with us here on WSJS. News Talk Sports for the Triad. I'm Will Dalton, also known as the WD. As we're continuing to follow the Masters, Rory McIlroy has absolutely been in his bag on day two. We'll get to that here in just the next couple of minutes. Got a jam-packed show for you today, full of great guests. Got Darren Vaught going to join us of ESPN and D1 Baseball. Also have Will Pelagic, the voice of Charlotte FC, that's actually going to be joining us in the next 15 minutes or so. And then we've got Stephen Beck, who is now, not only does he do Waking Up Proud 9 to 11 a.m. on Saturday mornings, he does the Daily Pulse 9 to 10 a.m. Weekday morning. So we're going to chat with him later on this hour. But getting to that golf that we just teased, Rory McIlroy leading the way right now, 7 under par. So he finished yesterday at the top of the leaderboard at 5 under, and he did not miss a beat. He started the day 3 straight birdies, continuing to roll. It's pretty clear that winning the Masters last year really did not affect him coming into this year at all. There were some that maybe thought, is he going to be a little less hungry for it? Or, you know, now that that chase, you know, now that the chase is off, is he going to be a little more lax? No, not the case at all for Rory McIlroy. And I don't think you should have thought anything differently coming into this course, as we discussed with John Dell a couple of days ago, as he's live out there at Augusta. Enjoyed listening to him sit down with Scott Van Pelt yesterday as they were talking about the Champions locker room. They had a great conversation, and you know, Rory kind of opened up about what it's like to be able to be in that exclusive club. And he said yesterday, after he was talking to SVP after his round was over, he's like, I'm literally about to go have a drink, put on my green jacket, and I'm going to call it a day. And that was what Rory had on the agenda, going to the Champions locker room yesterday after his great round. So when he met with the media, though, after the round, somebody asked him about how he felt when he got to the course yesterday before he teed off as he was warming up. You know, did it feel any different? Which sometimes I roll my eyes at that, just because it's like he feels the same all the time. Because I know these athletes, they have pretty much the same approach all the time, from game to game, from match to match. It doesn't really matter. But it is, I think, a little bit of a valid question, given the fact that he just won it last year. Are you feeling anything different as you step up for your first round yesterday? And here was Rory talking about it.
No, I was nervous. I was anxious, just like I always am on that first tee. It's the first round of major season. You know, the first round of the 16 most important rounds of the year. I'm thankful that I felt the same as I always have. I think it would be worrisome if I didn't feel that way, because it definitely still means something to me. So, I would say that I didn't hit the ball very well the first 7 holes, and sometimes here that would lead me to get tentative and a little guidey, and I kept swinging, just trusting that, you know, I'm going to find it eventually.
And he played like it. He played like it. And he's still doing it today as he sits at 7 under par through 8. And he leads right now by a couple of strokes. We'll get you some live Masters updates here a little later on. So that was one takeaway from yesterday in day one. The other one was, whoo, buddy, tough start for the LIV golf guys, huh? We'll talk to Stephen Beck about this at 4:45, because he's very much, he's been very vocal about his feelings about LIV Golf. We'll talk to him about that. But, I mean, Bryson DeChambeau, who was your boy's pick to win it all. Who, buddy? Not a great day. Now, as of right now, he is in the cut. He is above the cut line, which is, you know, the top 50. Currently sitting at tied for 44. He's now at plus 3, so he has improved a little bit, but still got some work to do. But not even just him. John Rahm had a horrendous day. He's currently above the cut as well at 4 over par, but it's not gone great for him because those were the two LIV guys that were viewed as guys from LIV that could be most favored to win it. And, you know, Bryson, he was in that final round and collapsed last year, but he had just won his last two LIV events, and I think this is a good lesson of you got to take those LIV results with a grain of salt when it comes to the Masters and PGA events because it's just a different setup. It's different layout, and it's just not the same. So, I mean, they didn't even have anybody finish under par yesterday. The highest they had yesterday was Sergio Garcia, who finished even. That, yeah, Morgan's over here grimacing. Yeah, not so good, huh? Not so good. The last thing that was obviously noticeable from yesterday was not having Tiger Woods there, not having Phil Mickelson either. Very notable. Now, we know very recent, you know, Tiger Woods, the rolling his car, you know, having the drugs that he was on. He's very much seems to be addicted to the pain meds, which, I mean, he's in a lot of pain a lot of the time with all the surgeries that he's had with, you know, his legs and his back. In fact, there were many, many years ago, he actually did Navy SEALs training. And it's funny. Well, it's not funny, but it's interesting. So Gary Player, he was talking to the media yesterday, and he was actually asked about Tiger, and before he gave the answer we're going to play for you here, he was talking about how he has a buddy that went through Navy SEALs training, and he told Gary, mark my words, Tiger is going to have back and leg issues and pain later down the road from what they do in that SEALs training. And, you know, obviously there's been some car crashes that have aided in that pain as well, but mixing all together, plus you're an athlete, not great. And so, yes, you can become addicted to the pain meds, as apparently Tiger has. But here was Gary Player when asked what advice he would have for Tiger.
I had a friend who was a Navy SEAL scout, and he said this long ago. He said, Tiger will really suffer in future with his back and his legs. And look what's happened. I think it's 20 operations on one, either the back or the legs, but many, many operations on his leg and his back. So he's in pain. Do I blame him for taking medicine? Hell no. He has sleep deprivation. Do I blame him for taking something to help him sleep? No. But I don't think he should drive a car. When you're taking that medicine, it's dangerous when you're driving a car. Same as it's dangerous when you look at your cell phone in the car. There's 6,000 accidents a day in America in motor cars. So I just think all he's got to do is just not drive a car and get a chauffeur.
And part of the problem with that is I don't think Tiger wants to do that because I don't think he wants a chauffeur taking him where he goes and for what he might want to do. Don't think he wants anybody to know about some of those rendezvous. Just a thought. 336-777-1600 is the number to call. If you have thoughts on the Masters, if you have thoughts, I want to hear from you. You know, if you have thoughts on what we saw from the LIV Golf guys yesterday, how, you know, the reaction to Rory McIlroy and the day he's having so far, or any other Masters items, we'd love to hear from you in our YouTube comments, on our Xtreme, WSJS Radio, The Drive with Will Dalton, all of those things. Morgan Corson is the executive producer of this show. So you had some Little Caesars earlier. That seems to be a common theme here.
Only when I'm driving.
Only when you're driving?
Yeah, it's a good dinner snack combo. It's easy to eat pizza on the road.
My man loves some Little Caesars. Like, I got into the office today, and he was about to go to lunch shortly thereafter. He's like, yep, going to Little Caesars. And I'm like, didn't you just go there the other day? Yep. Yep. It is good.
It's good pizza. You can't beat it for $7.49.
It is good. I went to see a friend the other day, and they had some Little Caesars boxes on the counter, and I thought of you. I was like, oh, boy, there's Morgan's favorite. Before we get to Wilpologic, let's talk some Charlotte Hornets, because there's a number of items on the bone, or there's a little bit of meat on the bone there. So tonight, it's the rematch. Detroit coming into Charlotte. The first time the Hornets have faced the Pistons since the brawl, the brouhaha that resulted in Miles Bridges, Musa Diabate, Jalen Duren, and Beef Stew getting suspended. Now, Detroit is fully healthy. Coming in fully healthy. We saw Cade Cunningham return the other night, put up a 13-point double-double, so he's back in the mix. And for Charlotte, got Coby White activated, ready to go. He was out in the last game for the Hornets, which really probably cost them a little bit against the Celtics. But nonetheless, it's going to be an exciting game tonight. Exciting atmosphere at Spectrum Center. But I want to talk a little bit more about this, because the conversation's been ramping up about the Rookie of the Year debate between Con Knipple and between Cooper Flagg. It's been a discussion for months now, but it's starting to ramp up because we're getting closer and closer to those awards being unveiled. And it's essentially come down to this. Do you value the numbers more, the eye-popping numbers that Cooper Flagg has put up and the 50 points here and there that he's done lately? Or do you value also really consistent and good numbers in Con Knipple, but somebody that has affected a culture of a franchise and winning and getting them to the postseason and actually being talked about seriously for the first time in a decade minimum? Which one do you prefer? And some of the people that we've heard from, they have thoughts on it. Charles Lee yesterday at practice had thoughts on this.
The rookie class this year has been pretty impressive, and, you know, Flagg is one of the guys that's up there, and I think that he's shown some good moments. But I said it about a month ago, to me it's not even close. I still feel that way. I think that this period of time has shown it even more. When you have a guy that's been as productive as Con has been, when he's been as consistent as he is, and as efficient as he's been on a playoff caliber team, I think that's pretty impressive. And there's things that show historically what he's been able to do as a rookie, but then there's even some stats, if you dive even deeper into the advanced stats and stuff, of he's just one of the best players in the NBA, not even just as a rookie.
That's Charles Lee talking about this matter. But it goes even beyond Hornet circles. Here was Reggie Miller on a show that you can listen to here on WSJS, the Dan Patrick Show. Went on with him, and, you know, he gave Cooper Flagg his props, rightfully so, but he had some thoughts about Con as well.
But what Cooper Flagg has done over the last week or so, 51 and then I think 45 against the Lakers, that's great and all. But Con and his team, every game means something. I mean, they've had the second best record, I believe, since January 22nd, only behind the Spurs. And if you look at their starting five, LaMelo, Brandon Miller, Con, Miles Bridges, Musa Diabate, their plus minus by far, their starting five by far is superior than any other starting five since January 1st.
So there's Reggie Miller echoing some of the same things as Charles Lee there. Lastly, we get to Doc Rivers, who he had, you know, he was kind of split on it, but here he was discussing the Rookie of the Year conversation.
It's Cooper Flagg's numbers just scream at you. They really do. Scoring 40, scoring 50, being the point guard, playing a position that he's never played before, handling it night in, and the featured guy each night. Like, when you play Dallas, you're preparing for Cooper Flagg. But what Con has done is, in my opinion, he's changed the culture of an organization that has had cultural problems.
And that's no small thing. You know, I don't want to say anybody can come in and put up Cooper Flagg type numbers, because they can't. But I don't know. I just feel changing the culture of a franchise is such a different thing.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think that what Cooper Flagg is doing is extremely difficult to do at his age. Scoring 50 points as a teenager is no easy feat. Scoring 50 points at all is not easy. But the consistency that Knipples had and the change that we've seen at Charlotte. Like, LaMelo had a small change when he came into Charlotte. But I feel like this was really what the team needed to get over the hump and get to the next level. And Cooper Flagg really hasn't done that with the Mavericks.
Facts, feelings, and the occasional bad idea. Welcome to The Drive, the Triad's longest-running live sports talk show.
Back at it on The Drive, right here on WSJS, as we welcome in the voice of Charlotte FC, Will Pelagic, who, when we were in the break and he saw the first thing out of his mouth, when he saw me and my shirt, he started doing the Reading Rainbow theme. And then he asked, are you even old enough to know when this debuted? And I said, I don't know if I am or not.
LeVar Burton, man, that was part of my childhood. That definitely was.
I mean, it's probably what, in the 90s this thing debuted? I don't know.
Maybe late 80s. I want to say late 80s.
Yeah, it's a little before my time. It's the whippersnapper over here, as you called me in the break as well.
I believe it was warranted. It was very warranted.
Willie P, he knows how to make the magic happen. He does it every match on the call for Charlotte FC. And this past weekend against Philadelphia was no exception. A 2-1 win for Charlotte. And one of those goal calls, see if you can detect a little bit of magic that might be on this call by our guy, Willie P.
Let's go, Charlotte. Hopping below us right now. Zaha for Pepe. Yeah, one touch and throw the body. He knocked out himself. Freeman couldn't shoot it. Wesley shoots it. It's good!
They auto tune
on it.
They auto tune. Yeah, I mean that is the club trying to go innovative. I didn't get any advance notice on that one. That showed up, and I was like, man, I had a couple people put it in my mentions, and I was like, ooh, okay. So, hey, man, anything that keeps getting the word out on our broadcasts and on how much we love this team.
That's right. We'll get to the match against Nashville tomorrow night here in just a minute. But something that's happening before that, tonight, the Detroit Pistons. They're rolling into Charlotte. It's the first time these two have met since the big brawl that got several players suspended back when that happened. And this is a fully healthy Detroit Pistons team. Cade Cunningham made his return just the other night. Had a double-double in his return. So the good news for Charlotte is you got Coby White activated for tonight as well. So what do you, with this being the second-to-last game of the regular season, the finale will be against the Knicks, what do you expect to see from the Hornets tonight, who have a lot in the balance here in terms of play-in seeding?
Well, I know the Hornets will definitely be up for it. Getting Coby White back tonight is huge, particularly because you saw how much they missed him in the game on Tuesday night in Boston. Mm-hmm. I wonder... Yes, Detroit is at full strength and Detroit is healthy, but I also wonder how much they really want any part of this game after, say, maybe the first half. I mean, they'll be obviously the initial bout of emotion that comes into play, and I know Detroit isn't a team that you automatically think of that has the ability to throttle down, but seeing this from a lot of teams here over the course of the last couple of days that, you know, even when they have all their guys available – they are somewhat kind of pulling up on the air brake a little bit in the third and fourth quarter. So it would not shock me if there comes a point in the game where if it is still very much in the balance, maybe Detroit starts pulling some starters and putting some longer minutes, some of their reserves on there just to make sure that those guys are safe for when the playoffs actually start to come around. I know that on Sunday, I feel like I think all those guys will probably be in street clothes, and they've basically have said as much. But I'm curious because it's weird, Will. I find it hard to believe that all these teams just seem to be saving their best guys to play against Charlotte. It used to be that they all would sit guys against Charlotte before Charlotte got good.
Yeah.
And now we're seeing the inverse. And I'm wondering also if it's just a way of being like, hey, by the way, we want to get Charlotte down because that's the last team we want to see in this postseason. So it almost kind of feels like they've tried to eliminate Charlotte via natural selection in a way. So I'm wondering if Charlotte takes that personally. I still feel like Charlotte has the ability to win this game on balance. I thought they were very much in that game against Detroit the first time or last time around before the ejections of Diabate and Miles Bridges. I think those definitely put them behind the eight ball. But it's a very, very curious game tonight. And then if they win tonight and they get the requisite amount of results, then everything's on the table Sunday. And it very well might happen that if the Knicks get the right results in their favor, that game means nothing to them on Sunday. So then maybe they lay down against Charlotte at MSG on Sunday night. So they still could finish anywhere between, you know, outside of the play-in or any one of the four play-in spots. So incredibly intriguing tonight here at the Hive.
It is. Will Pelagic, the voice of Charlotte FC, with us here on WSJS. Before we get to a Charlotte FC match tomorrow night with Nashville, one more item on the Hornets, because the conversation's been going on for months now, but it's starting to kind of ramp up again. Like we heard from Charles Lee yesterday at practice. We heard from Doc Rivers on with Dan Patrick about it. Heard from Reggie Miller again about it. And the consensus between Con Knipple and Cooper Flagg for Rookie of the Year seems to be either you go with Cooper Flagg, who has the better numbers and, you know, the 50-point games and things like that that just pop out at you, or you go with a guy in Con Knipple who has had, you know, NBA veteran-like numbers, really good numbers, but he's actually impacting winning and leading his team into the postseason, a place that the Mavericks are not at. Where do you land on this conversation?
Here's the thing. Cooper Flagg's got good numbers. I don't think anybody's denying that. Con Knipple literally is setting an NBA record. He has shattered an NBA record for most three-pointers made by a rookie in a single season, and he very well might lead the entire darn league in three-pointers made. And yeah, I know he's had a little bit of a backslide here, and maybe there's a rookie wall. I know he's been dealing with a back injury, but breaking an NBA record, having requisite numbers, and oh, by the way, affecting winning, There's no comparison. I understand that there's this love and desire about what Cooper Flagg is doing from a singular standpoint, But look at all that did for the Dallas Mavericks. The Dallas Mavericks are going to be sitting at home on Monday afternoon and evening. They're doing a clean-out day at American Airlines Center on Monday night. So as far as I'm concerned, you go with the guy who's going to be in the playoffs. You go with the guy who's playing beyond Game 82, and you're going with a guy who's going to have his name etched in the record books with something that feels like an unbreakable record, Will. And I know when Keegan Murray did it, you know, with the 208 or whatever it was, three-pointers made, everyone was like, wow. Well, no one's ever done what Con Knipple has ever done. And if that doesn't get rewarded requisitely by the NBA, then they're stupider than I give them credit for, which is not a lot.
That's a fair point. Really is. So I want to get into this game, or this match, I should say, Charlotte FC, Nashville, because it'll be 7:30 at the bank. You and Anna Whitty on the call. You can listen to it right here on WSJS. And Nashville is 4-1-1. However, they did just have a midweek CONCACAF quarterfinal match. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, how much do you think fatigue could play a role for them as they come into the bank tomorrow night?
Not just fatigue, Will, but also just knowing that they will have to play again on Tuesday night at altitude in Mexico City in the second leg of that quarterfinal against Club America, who is no slouch, by the way. This is a competition that MLS teams traditionally have not done well in. Only one team has won it, and that was the Seattle Sounders a couple of years ago. So this is a tournament that the club has been very, very public about prioritizing, and they have shown a demonstrated precedent in the past of rotating their squad. Now, how much they rotate in this matchup versus how they've done in the past, it could be opponent dependent. I know they have a lot of respect for Charlotte, and so maybe they rotate a little bit less. But knowing the fact that they have to literally go from Charlotte to Nashville and then to Mexico City in a matter of 62 hours, it to me, I feel like begs the question how much of these guys are actually going to play. I do think you will see each of the top three at some point in this match, Surridge, Hani Mukhtar, and Christian Espinoza, the newly acquired winger from San Jose. I think you will see all three of them on the pitch by the end of it, but I don't know if you'll see all three of them at the start or any of them at the start, quite frankly, just because I know that they've wanted to see themselves through that CONCACAF Champions Cup match. Having said that, they're still very dangerous. They're probably deeper squad than they have been in recent memory. They've got a great coach in BJ Callahan, who definitely has a cup victory under his belt already with winning the U.S. Open Cup last year. So it's part of the reason why they got themselves a CONCACAF berth is because of that U.S. Open Cup win. So I say all that to say Charlotte's home form has the ability to win out. The problem is you don't have Wilfred Zaha. They did get the shot in the arm of getting Rodolfo Aloco up on the first team roster, 19-year-old. Don't know if he's going to start or not, but he's definitely somebody who provides a little bit of that magic off the bench for Charlotte FC, 19-year-old Benin International. And I think a lot of it falls squarely on, can you get the same amount of offense without Wilfred Zaha from that front three in Charlotte? And can they be also as difficult to beat as they have been? They've had a pretty good run of play against Nashville in their building, a 3-1 record all time against them. So I'm thinking that it's a situation where Charlotte still comes into this as a favorite because of just how demonstrative the home road splits are, but it's far from a walkover. It's great measuring stick test for this team going up against a team that currently occupies first place in the Eastern Conference.
It's a match you can listen to tomorrow night at 7:30 right here on WSJS. Will Pelagic and Anna Whitty on the call. At what point does Willie P start to do his NFL draft deep dive for the Panthers? Because they got that 19 pick, and you know, we heard Dave Canales at the NFC coaches breakfast the other week talking about he did give three positions. He gave wide out, tight end, and safety as some things they would be looking at. I get smoke screens are a thing, but they could afford to upgrade at tight end. When do you start looking into such things?
First off, I don't believe anything that comes out of the mouth of either of those dudes. Because last year, they were all talking about, oh, we got to do this, we got to do that, we got to do this, we got to do that. And we took a wide receiver. So I'm not believing anything that comes out of Dave Canales' mouth. I know Dan Morgan's got a presser, I think, Monday or Tuesday. Yeah. I don't believe a damn word that comes out of Dan Morgan's mouth. Other than, you know, different flatterings about certain players. I'll believe those things, but in terms of any kind of inklings or if you're trying to read any tea leaves, I don't think anything that you could say that they say publicly is worth a darn at this point. Having said that, I feel like safety is the position that is one the Panthers should be circling around. I mean, the kid Thieneman is the one guy who I feel like is my current draft crush if he is there. I know that Kenyon Sadiq has been kind of mocked to the Panthers in a couple of different mocks as well. It does seem like a lot of that smoke we saw early about edge rusher is gone because of the Jalen Phillips signing. I wouldn't like a tight end that's not Sadiq at that point. And I wouldn't – I mean, if it comes down to it, if you see a tackle there that maybe drops down from, say, that top 10 or top 15 level grade and is there for you at 19, I wouldn't mind taking it because you can never be criticized for bulking up the offensive line. I also wouldn't mind a trade back. I mean, that's another situation, too, the Panthers could find themselves in because I think there are a lot of players between 19 and 51 that make a heck of a lot of sense, but it could be considered a reach at 19 or not available with them at 51. So they're in a tricky spot in terms of the type of player I feel like could really be impactful for them. I think about the center position, too, as well. If you trade back and you get another pick at the top of the second round, that probably helps you get your center of the future as well. So there's a lot of intrigue surrounding it, but I think the biggest thing that I like about what the Panthers have to do in this draft is that they're not beholden to any singular need.
Right.
I think a lot of it is going to come down to how the board falls to them, and that's an enviable spot to be in, knowing that you have confidence in the current build that you have, and also the fact that you don't feel like you are so far behind you have to take somebody specifically at a certain position.
I, too, am a fan of Kenyon Sadiq's work. We were talking about him yesterday. We'll see what Dan Morgan does or does not have to say on Tuesday of next week at his presser. Willie P., we will be listening to what you have to say, though, tomorrow night on the call. Charlotte FC Nashville, be listening right here on WSJS. We appreciate the time, and we'll do it again next week.
That is our slogan. Charlotte FC broadcasts more believable than a coach or GM pre-draft press conference.
See you, Willie P.
Thank you, pal.
There he goes. Will Pelagic, the voice of Charlotte FC.
Your team. Your take.
Let's get the show going.
Your drive home.
Back at it on a Friday drive right here on WSJS. Stephen Beck going to join us in about 7 to 8 minutes. But before we get to him, got a little college basketball breaking news from last night to discuss. But before we get to that, let's try to make some money in Dalton's Dollars.
It's time to cash in. Welcome to Dalton's Dollars.
Show me the money!
Show me the money.
Breaking down the board and building the bankroll.
That's right. Just had two bets last night. Wanted to keep it simple. That's what we did. Went 1-1. Took the Rockets, 4.5-point favorites against the Sixers. Rockets cleared that one, 113-102.
Show me the money!
The one that did not hit, that I admittedly bet with my heart, not my head, because I wanted to try and manifest this, something you should never do when gambling. I took the Heat money line against the Raptors, should have known better. The second time in a row these two were playing. Raptors beat them the first time. Probably should have taken them last night, but I didn't. So that one did not cash. However, let's look at what we got going on today. Let's do that. I got three bets I want to place. Starting in baseball, Yankees, tough couple of days. Lost some games. Got the Tampa Bay Rays starting a fresh series in Tampa Bay tonight. I think I like the Yankees money line at minus 116 odds.
Show me the money!
I like them to get right. I do. Shifting to the NBA, I was taking a look at, of course, Pistons Hornets. That's the event tonight. I like Brandon Miller to go under 19.5 points.
Show me the money!
I think I like that. And then looking at the spread, Hornets, they're favored by 5.5. I think I'm going to take the Pistons to cover 5.5-point dogs.
Show me the money!
That feels a little bit better. So in review, Pistons, 5.5-point dogs. Going to take Brandon Miller under 19.5 points. And I like the Yankees money line against the Rays. It's been Dalton's Dollars. Very quickly, before we get to Stephen Beck, wanted to hit on this. Elliot Cadeau is going to be returning to Michigan. The Final Four, most outstanding player. Morgan, you're the Michigan fan over here. How you feeling about this?
I love this. I love this for Michigan. We've got a good group of players coming in from high school. I don't think any of them have what Elliot Cadeau has in the playmaking ability, whether it's dishing the ball or taking the clutch threes that he needs or driving to the basket. I think this is a great sign by Michigan. I think all Michigan fans were hoping for this. This is a best-case scenario for the Wolverines.
I think it's terrific because this is senior year for Elliot Cadeau, and while he could have gone to the draft, I don't know where. I mean, do you know where his draft stock would have been? I personally have not looked at it. Maybe late first round, if that. I don't even think he would have been that.
Mid to late second at best.
Yeah.
Like, I don't. He might have gone undrafted.
He could have afforded to come back to Michigan another year, because when he got under Dusty May, that was somebody who really let him turn it loose, and it resulted in similar-ish stats for the year as his time in Carolina, but down the stretch of the tournament and in the Final Four, he just turned it up a notch. So I love that for them. Also love it because you got Tennessee transfer, J.P. Estrella, that committed the other day. Actually, yesterday that happened. And that's pretty big. Now, what if you get Juke Harris over there? I'm just saying.
It would be an amazing thing to happen. Because if Juke Harris comes, he had, I think he put 19 to 20 on Michigan when they played. just a phenomenal player, and pair his shooting abilities with Cadeau's ability to pass the ball in random ways.
Mm-hmm.
It would be a spectacular show to watch. Pair it with this 6'11 forward that we just got out of the portal.
I love it. Juke Harris. He's going to be a name to watch for Michigan or Carolina. What if we swipe him away from you? Wouldn't that be funny? Jay Davis in our comments here says, so you're telling me the Hornets are going to win by more than six and Miller's going to have 20-plus points? I'm telling you he's going to have under 19.5. That's what I'm telling you, Jay Davis. But yes, LaMelo's going to cook. Con Knipple's going to cook. Then Jay Davis also adds, WD, we want Juke in Chapel Hill. Yeah, we do. Yeah, we do. People in Durham might have something to say about that, too.
The Triad's only live sports talk show, The Drive. Will Dalton turned your ride home into a full contact sports debate.
Back at it on a Friday drive right here on WSJS, where we're now being joined by Stephen Beck, who is the host of Waking Up Proud on Saturdays, The Daily Pulse now, 9 to 10 a.m. weekdays. Where are you at right now?
I'm out swinging the sticks, brother. I mean, this weather... Masters weekend about 2 hours ago, I get a call and it's like, let's go play golf. And I'm just like, how can I pass that up? Let's do it. So we're out in the Triad playing a little bit today. I'm taking this hole off. They already agreed. They give me a birdie. So win.
I love that. You swinging them. Okay. Like how's it looking?
It's fair, man. I mean, I need to work on my short game. Honestly, If I could putt, that would be a world's difference for me.
So let's start with this. The LIV Golf people not having a great go of it, especially day one didn't have a great go of it. And I know you're somebody who is not crazy about the LIV Golf situation, so I'm sure you have thoughts on this. Why do you think the LIV Golf people are struggling so much out on the Masters course today?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a fair question. I think after day one, I saw where they were like 33 over par, something along those lines. Honestly, because they don't face the pressure, right? I mean, the whole idea of LIV Golf is that they've gotten the exorbitant amount of money. They've got the paycheck. They get to go out and play, you know, worlds away golf. But while they're doing it, they're wearing shorts and they're listening to tunes on the tee boxes. And up until this year, they were only playing 54 holes. So they weren't even getting in a full 72. And so I just think, you know, when you go from all amounts of pressure in the PGA Tour and you got to have your card, you got to be in the top 100 or so to keep it. You got to win majors to really make some money. And then you take all that away and it's just handed to you on a silver platter. I don't think it sets you up for the best competitive advantage. So, you know, it's interesting. I think I would add that I don't know that any of the courses, no matter where these guys go to in the world, that they would play a caliber, of course, as difficult as Augusta. I just don't think they see that very often.
Stephen Beck with us here on WSJS, where you can listen to him 9 to 10 a.m. weekdays and 9 to 11 on Saturday morning. So Patrick Reed, Rory McIlroy, currently tied at the top of the leaderboard at 6 under par. Who are you liking? Who did you like coming into the tournament, and how is that person doing so far?
Yeah, no, well, I did a four-pick parlay, and I won't go there. It's not turning out too great because one of those guys was Bryson DeChambeau
in that
four-pick parlay. You know, some of the other picks, Hideki Matsuyama and Matt Fitzpatrick, and, yeah, some of the other guys, again, struggle fest. But a part of that four-pick parlay was my outright winner as well, and that's Justin Rose, who he's unscathed through today's round, actually picked up a couple of strokes, I believe, on the leaders. And he's a guy who, honestly, he's very comfortable at Augusta National. He's finished in runner-up position three times, I believe, notwithstanding the one that he had just a year ago. He's driving it, I think, the furthest he's ever hit the ball. And he's, what,
40 plus. So we're talking about a guy who's he's just comfortable. I think he's going to be playing pretty free. Now, will that compare at all to Rory McIlroy? That's where I don't know. You know, Rory, he's got that. I don't know if you know that Rory strut about him. He's got all sorts of confidence that's been built up now that he got the monkey off of his back a year ago. So what did he say last night? He was going to go up to the Champions Clubhouse, put on his green jacket, and have a drink.
I mean, call it a day.
Not many guys can flex that way. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see those two go against one another in a playoff setting, maybe again coming this year if they can both stay right there on moving day coming up tomorrow.
So we haven't talked to you since High Point University, you know, had a nice little Cinderella story in the tournament. We talked to Chase Johnston also here on the show to get some of his thoughts. And I'll just ask you, because you're somebody who's very involved with High Point University, it means a lot to you. What's something that's going to really stick out to you that you'll remember about this most recent run for High Point?
Man, so much, honestly. And I had large amounts of FOMO being back here in North Carolina, getting ready for that Daily Pulse program you already mentioned. And, you know, my guys are of course, across country in Portland. But still, you know, taking in all of what happened with Chase, going from just solely seen as a three-point sniper, which back here at home, we know better than that. But I'm talking just across general observers, that's all he was seen for, and he makes the winning layup. I mean, that's so divine. I can't begin to really describe it. So I would say that's probably the biggest thing. Aside from that, I've really been immensely impressed at the alignment top down. I'm talking, you know, president of the university to Dan Houser, the athletic director, to Flynn Clayman, head coach. And when you get that symbiotic alignment, I'll just tell you, it's a worlds of difference made in a time right now where I think it's very slim margins in college basketball that separate really good from great.
I know you're out on the course and you're moving around on the golf cart, so we'll just give you one last thing here. Waking up proud tomorrow morning, 9 to 11 here on WSJS. Give us a tease what we might expect tomorrow.
Oh, man, so much. Your crowd should open up the phone lines and pitch this question. If you go wedding shopping and they expect a tip for the dress, is that frowned upon or is that, is that normal?
Huh.
Stories like that coming up tomorrow.
I will be curious to listen to that because I assume you should tip, but I don't know. I have no idea.
I don't know. I think tipping culture has gotten like completely out of hand. I never, as a dad of two young daughters, expectant that I'll have to pay for said wedding dress eventually. I just never imagined at that venue that I would be expected to leave a tip. Now, I'd certainly pay for the dress, but I don't know. That's not expected for me.
That's coming up tomorrow, 9 to 11 a.m. Waking Up Proud. You can listen right here on WSJS. Steven, enjoy the round of golf. Hope you shoot them well, and we'll talk to you next week.
Absolutely. I got a birdie here, and I talked in all their backswings, so they're thrilled.
Love that. All right. Steven Beck, there he goes. Love it. I love it when people call in from, like, just out in nature somewhere. Like, I love that authenticity. I really do. Just be where you are. You don't have to get all professional, set up, looking. Just, if you're at the grocery store, you're at the grocery store. That's the way I view it. Tell you what else. YMCA. They'll get you right. They really will, because a lot of times, if you are trying to get into shape, get a good fitness program going for yourself, get a little more disciplined. Sometimes by yourself, it can be difficult because you might not have the fortitude to keep yourself accountable. You might need somebody for that. Well, the YMCA, they got people for that. And, you know, they got great machines and at the gym there that they can help you with and kind of help you know, because a lot of times you get on a machine for the first time, you don't even know what you're looking at or how to use it. They can help you with that. Certified personal trainers. So They'll work one-on-one with you, help you stay motivated, accountable, and on track. Visit visit YMCANWNC.org.
Now, the moment you've all been waiting for.
This is The Drive, talking sports the right way.
Just reclaimed the lead. He's 7 under par. Just got a birdie on 12. So that put him a stroke above Reed there at the top of the board. We'll keep an eye on and keep updating you on the Masters, what's happening out there at Augusta. But, you know, golf is something that's very important to the Triad. College basketball obviously is too. But so is racing. So is NASCAR. And as it just so happens, the producer of this show, Morgan Corson, loves himself some racing, loves himself some NASCAR.
Love it.
And he's actually pretty knowledgeable about it. Like me, like I like racing. I was a little bit bigger of a fan as a kid, but I still like racing. I'm not as knowledgeable about it, like the ins and outs and everything like that. But Morgan is. He's good at talking about it. So this is us debuting something that we think the Triad's going to appreciate, a racing segment called In the Fast Lane.
Where speed meets the mic.
Wow, what a move! Gentlemen, start
your engines! This is the Fast Lane on WSJS.
Put on your seatbelt, check your mirrors, let's begin.
Your fast track to racing talk.
Love this music. It reminds me of a menu screen for a racing video game. That's the vibes I'm getting here. All right. What do we have today? What all do you got for us?
So tonight kicks off a three days of events at Bristol Motor Speedway. We've got the trucks tonight at 7:30, O'Reilly Series tomorrow at 7:30 p.m., and Sunday 500 laps at 3 p.m. at Bristol. In the truck series this year, it's pretty been dominated by Corey Heim this year. He's only raced 3 of the 5 races, but he's won 2 of them.
Okay.
He won 12 of the 22 races last year, and despite that, he did not get a full-time ride in any of the 3 series. The truck series is the bottom series, and a lot of people expected him to get a Cup Series ride full-time, and he didn't. No one offered him one. We don't know why, but my assumption would be he didn't have any sponsors coming with him. Sponsor money is how you get rides in NASCAR. It's all money. It's not. You could be the best driver in the world and have no sponsors, and you won't get a ride.
It wouldn't matter. Yeah.
So my assumption is sponsors. That's just speculation. But there's currently amongst the media rumblings that he's going to try and compete in the playoffs for the truck and run the rest of the truck series. But that would require him to get a waiver from NASCAR. You can't participate in the playoffs unless you've raced all the races.
Mm-hmm.
So you need a waiver for that. There's currently a movement right now amongst media and some fans that might happen for him because he's absolutely dominating in semi-decent equipment for Tricon Garage, the Toyota-funded team. So that's an interesting story developing. This weekend, he's going to be racing at Bristol in trucks, and he has a chance to win $500,000 if he wins the race as part of a mid-season update, kind of refresher for the series. He won the 2 previous races at Darlington and Rockingham, and if he wins this one, it's a $500,000 bonus, but he's going up against 8 Cup drivers. You ever heard of Kyle Busch?
We've heard of him around here.
He'll be racing Friday night. Just a little idea of what he's going up against.
So it's not
going to
be easy for him. That's what I'm gathering here, even though he's been on a roll.
Going up a series to the O'Reillys, they're starting their mid-season cash grab called the Dash for Cash.
Convenient.
4 highest racers, 4 that finished at the top of the bracket there last weekend at Rockingham, race this weekend for $100,000 and will automatically qualify next week if you win it. for the Dash for Cash race there.
Okay.
Now on to the Cup Series.
This is the fun stuff right here. This is the main event.
Goodyear has been producing semi-decent tires for NASCAR for a while now. They're not road tires, they're racing slicks.
Yeah.
But they haven't been very competitive with the tires, Goodyear, in designing them. This year, we have a brand new tire for Bristol, not seen before on track. Part of the issue is going from practice, qualifying, to racing. The different track temps cause tire wear to wear differently and rubber to be laid down on the track for extra grip differently.
This is fascinating. You were telling me about this yesterday, and I did not know this. This is really interesting.
Yeah, so depending on the temperature of the track, rubber gets laid down onto the track at a different pace.
Mm-hmm.
Thus, grip on the track is going to be a little different. The hotter the track, generally, the more slick it's going to be. Cooler the track, less rubber, a little more grippy. So this tire is going to be more even across the different times of the race and going to allow for more grip throughout the race, which has been a struggle in the last 10 years in these cars.
Okay, so there's some things that, like, they've made some adjustments to these cars, like the fuel conserving or whatever it's called, that people did not like so much.
So that doesn't apply to this track as much. So this is okay. A half-mile track. That's going to be more about your 2.5 miles, your Michigan, yeah. Daytona, and Talladega. Those are your fuel conserving tracks, and they're kind of figuring it out. They just flip the stages, which doesn't really do much. So what they did is, instead of having a 100-lap final stage, they're doing a 100-lap first stage and then 50s after that. Doesn't really do much for the racing. It's just NASCAR saying they can pretty much say that they did something.
But it sounds like the tire modification, though, like that.
The tire
this,
modification.
This is probably a welcome change, I
this
bet.
This is a very welcome change. NASCAR and Goodyear actually listened to what the teams were saying, and they tested this tire in November, and the three drivers that drove it, I think Bubba was one of them, had nothing but glowing reviews for it. So that's a big one. They're going to have 10 sets this weekend, which, fun fact, the teams actually have to buy the tires from Goodyear. They're not free. So each team has to buy them. They'll get 10 sets for the race and one for practice and one for qualifying. And you mentioned some modifications to the car. Short tracks this year, 750 horsepower. They listened. This is a huge deal for the cars. They've been flat out all the way down to the ground, pedal to the metal, and they're not getting passes, and it's hard to pass. This 750 is going to give the engine more go, and you can get by people a little easier, and it's easier to move these cars. They're heavy cars. The tires are super wide and super grippy. These cars don't like to be moved, and you have to pretty much wreck somebody to get past them. This is going to be an interesting Bristol race, where last year this race, not a lot of passing. Kyle Larson pretty much dominated. This year, I'm expecting a lot of passing in a very competitive field. Speaking of a competitive field, though, returning to the Hendrick 48 car is Alex Bowman after a month and a half of vertigo issues.
Ugh.
That started at a road course. He left it early. Justin Allgaier been filling in, been doing okay for him, but this car needed to have his driver back. Alex Bowman is on the hot seat right now. If you don't know this,
I don't.
Hendrick is like the premier NASCAR team.
Yeah.
They are... That is like
that's
the
Jeff
top
Gordon,
of the
right?
Jeff Gordon.
He's the second in command there, I think.
Second in command. Jimmy Johnson. Dale Earnhardt Jr. later in his career when he was driving that 88 car. That was all Hendrick Motorsports. Chase Elliott right now, Hendrick. That's the cream of the crop. That's the best stuff. And he's been underperforming. He is on a contract year this year. If he doesn't win at least two or three races, he's probably not going to be back in Hendrick equipment next season. So this vertigo really set him back a lot in his hopes to stay with this team. Now, onto the standings.
Ooh.
Tyler Reddick and Michael Jordan have been absolutely crushing the competition. Four wins for Tyler Reddick.
First three.
First time that ever happened. The driver won the first three races of a season. He's been crushing it. Michael Jordan, Denny Hamlin put together a really good team this year. Toyota's won 5 of the 7 races this season. So far, Chevy's got a new body. So generally, when you get a new external body, it's going to take a minute to figure that out, right? They were in the Mustang body or the Camaro body. Sorry. They just went to a generic Chevy body, but the Chevys are figuring it out. this race look for Kyle Larson, Kyle Busch, and Denny Hamlin to be out front this race. Those are my three picks. A sleeper pick, Ryan Blaney.
Okay. And that's been In the Fast Lane. Already got some good feedback on this segment in our YouTube comments here. Lil Dog writing in, hell yeah, racing talk. I love NASCAR and racing. And the only place I hear about it is on the NASCAR XM channel. And now you can hear it on this show too. That's what I got to say about that. And then he said Heim should be at in the 35 next year for the 23 XI Racing.
Yeah, so the 23-11 Racing is Michael Jordan, Denny Hamlin backed.
Yeah.
The current driver in that is Riley Herbst, and the reason he has that is because he has a huge monster backing. Huge. Monster's been with him for like the last five
Long
or six
time.
Years. And while he's rising the ranks from ARCA all the way up. But I feel like Heim is on a hot seat as well. Heim could take that from Herbst this year. There's a potential for that. Herbst has been massively underperforming compared to, well, Reddick winning 4 of 7.
It's very fascinating stuff. And again, like that, we know the Triad appreciates racing, is passionate about it, so we just kind of wanted to get to some of those things. Something else I wanted to get to, though. I saw this. So Wake Forest Golf has put out a new logo. I'd like to know your thoughts on it. So if you're watching on our YouTube X-Stream, you can see this. It's what they're calling the Swingin' Deacon. Get this on a shirt and get it to the studio. Somebody. On a hat. This would be awesome.
Like on a polo? Like get it on a nice horizontal striped polo?
Yeah. 336-777-1600 if you have thoughts on the Swingin' Deacon. I think this is sick. Like I know a lot of times people don't like to go away from traditional logos, but I think it's pretty cool. And if you're not watching on YouTube or X, first of all, what's wrong with you? Other than if you're driving, then I don't want you to do it. But and what it is, though, it's the Demon Deacon, shocker. And he's got a driver. He's all the way back. He's about to swing. And then the golf ball on the tee here, it's just got the Wake Forest logo on it. So I think this is pretty cool. Something else, though, the MLB special uniform City Connect, those have been revealed too. And if you're on YouTube and X right now, you're also going to take a look at these. Have you seen these, Morgan? Is this the first time you've got to see them?
Briefly looked at them. It's nice to see another look at them so I can see just how bad all these jerseys are. Except for Atlanta.
They are not bad.
Atlanta and Cincinnati have a good one. The Pirates, that's a great one. I love that. All the other ones can go in the can, though.
Here's what I'd say. And we're going to talk to Darren Vaught here in just a minute. So this is very fitting that we're doing this now. I'm sure he's seen these. He loves this type of thing. The Atlanta ones are sick. Love that. I saw the Royals uniform getting a lot of hate. It's like an R with a crown over top of it, and then the crown is on the hat, too. Saw that getting some unnecessary hate, and I don't appreciate it. I think it's pretty sick. The Pirates with the all black, that's pretty cool. I like that the Padres went back to the OG colors, the navy blue and orange, went back to that. I don't get the Brewers one. I mean, I get it, but I don't get why they went with this. It says Wisco. Should have just did Wisconsin. Should have just did that.
Or just Whisk.
Yeah.
Or Whis.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I don't. There's nothing. There's no pizzazz there, in my opinion. If you want the pizzazz, look at this Cincinnati Reds uniform. That is terrific.
The best one of the group.
Yeah, you got the C on one side, the number on the other, and it's all red. Red jersey, red pants. Go big red. Microphone popping over here. That's not good. Baltimore, it's fine. It's pretty solid. I don't like to give compliments to my in-division opponents, but...
The Boreals did pretty good here.
The Boreals. I love that. The Texas Ranger one where it's just Tejas. T-E-J-A-S. Yeah, I don't I'm not feeling that one. Atlanta's the OG. Now, I feel like they've done versions of the Atlanta, of this baby blue, powder blue, however you describe it, Atlanta jerseys before in different ways. But, I mean, listen, if it ain't broke, those are the City Connect uniforms.
No scripts, no safe takes, no chance you're bored. You're on the Triad's longest-running live sports talk show, The Drive.
SJS, and this is a segment we always look forward to where we welcome in our perennial baseball guy here on The Drive. It is our good friend Darren Vaught of ESPN, ACC Network, D1 Baseball, Lottery Boy, all of it. Darren, you sound like you're on the road. Where are you heading?
I am. I've got Duke at NC State tonight. Big game one of a series, fun pitching matchup, and then flying out tomorrow for Louisville for my network game on Sunday. So busy weekend, but glad to be with you.
Love it. Always glad to have you. So let's get to that game that you're going to be on the call for. ACC Network, 1 o'clock Sunday, part of your ESPN package. Louisville-Stanford. Louisville's a team that made it to Omaha last year. Give us the scoop for this game. What are some things we need to be watching out for as we listen to you on the call?
Yeah, those familiar with my work know that I'm all about Stanford first baseman, the sophomore, the Japanese phenom, Rintaro Sasaki.
Yeah.
This will actually be, since I did that mini audio documentary series, however you want to categorize it, this will be the first time I've had a Stanford game on my schedule. So I'm excited to see Rintaro, catch up with him and the rest of that staff that I got to know so well throughout that project. Stanford can hit it. Louisville can absolutely hit it. They hit about 340 as a team for the season. It's top 10 in the country. So I would expect an offensive matchup, especially on a Sunday where pitching staffs are a little more uncertain. It's a series that both teams could really use. You mentioned Louisville made it to the College World Series last year. I was talking with Coach McDonald, Dan McDonald, their head coach earlier today, and he, without really setting the bar at this team should be in Omaha, he drew some parallels between this team and that team that they had a season ago. Louisville has struggled in ACC play, no doubt. They continue to hit it well. Pitching has been a bit of a question mark for them, but they've started to get some consistency with it. Like, they've got their weekend rotation. It feels like it's set. And, you know, that can settle a bullpen that's been in disarray as well. That was kind of the case for them last year. And they've had some star players out due to injury, much like they did last year. A season ago, Will, Louisville finished the regular season in ninth place in the ACC, yet they were the league's only representative in the College World Series. I think there are some valid parallels between that team and this team. Again, not that it's going to go to Omaha or is guaranteed to go to Omaha, but they've got some real star power with the bat. Tage Davis is, if you're not familiar, you should probably tune in for him and him alone. He's, in the past week or so, he's hit two home runs of 490 feet or more. One of them was at his eyeballs when it was pitched. So, like, he's a stud. One of the more intimidating hitters in the country. They've got a guy like Zion Rose back in their lineup at the top of the lineup, who's just an electric player. Don't let him get on the base path. He will terrorize you. So I'm looking forward to it. Should be a lot of fun. And you know me, when we do these TV games, man, I root for the show. Therefore, I hope Stanford wins one and Louisville wins the other, and we got a rubber match on Sunday.
Darren Vaught with us here on WSJS of ESPN, D1 Baseball. So switching over to the major leagues now, there have been a number of good storylines throughout the young season that we've had so far, but what are some of the things that are standing out to you so far, Darren?
I think the young talent in baseball, this was a story last year, a story the year before. Like, that's one of the massive storylines to me, and it's just an illustration of how good we've got it in the game of baseball right now. A guy like Connor Griffin making his major league debut at 20 years old for the Pittsburgh Pirates. I think this dude is A-Rod when it's all said and done. He's that kind of talent, and they just inked him to a long-term deal through 2034. Good for the Pirates, good for them, and in terms of, you know, a franchise that, to be blunt, doesn't always try, and they're doing what they can to maximize the years in which they have Paul Skeens at the top of their rotation. Connor Griffin's going to be a big piece of that, right, over many years to come. I think another story, Will, is you remember how terrible the Colorado Rockies were last year.
Oh, yeah.
Well, how about the best, the longest active winning streak in all of Major League Baseball right now?
Pretty like crazy.
I don't think they're going to be good by any means, but, again, another team in a market that bluntly doesn't always try to be successful as a baseball team, actually putting it in and trying some. I like the A's for that reason, too. We talked a lot about their young talent, including former Wake Forest star, AL Rookie of the Year, Nick Kurtz, a season ago. Jeffrey Springs pitched another phenomenal outing as their starter yesterday. I like the A's a lot. So, you know, kind of some unexpected teams entering the fray is one of the things that really stands out to me early in the season, in addition to, and I'm sure you guys have covered it, the ABS challenge system. I mean, just what a revelation. I think a few years ago when the pitch clock was introduced, we might have predicted that nothing could ever enhance the game more. ABS is knocking on that door, man. It's been great to see.
Darren Vaught with us here on WSJS. Before we get to out of left field, so we threw this up on the screen just a little while ago, putting it up on there now. Obviously, you can't see it because you're driving, but I'm sure you've had a look at these City Connect uniforms in Major League Baseball. There's some bangers in this, like Baltimore. I don't like saying much good about the Orioles, but I actually think they did a good job with the whole Be More on the front. The hat, the logo's a little meh. I think Cincinnati crushed it with the all red look. Atlanta with the baby blue, powder blue, whatever you want to call it, and just Atlanta on the front. I thought that was good. But what were some of your thoughts on the City Connect uniforms, Darren?
Yeah, I like Milwaukee's too. The Brewers with the Wisco theme, short for Wisconsin, obviously. That's a pretty good one. I honestly, flipping through the photos, I think it was on an Instagram post when I first saw them, all the new ones, I don't know that there are any bad misses with these uniforms. I like all of them. I'm with you on Baltimore. The hat logo is not it for me. I don't like the stylization on the numerals on that uniform either. Otherwise, it has a chance to be a really, really clean uniform. But those, you know, I'll dock points for those two things and still like it a lot, right? I like the old school bird perched up onto the lettering over the chest. That's cool. Atlanta 8, like this is...
Yeah, that's the best one.
Like, perfection. Perfection. Those jerseys are going to become pop culture phenomenons, I think. Like, that, there will be versions of that jersey worn in music videos for years to come, I think. Like, that, it's going to be a hit in that way, just because of the old school but newness kind of nature of it, right? Like, it's a perfect uniform. I thought the Reds also did well with the solid reds. Those are cool. The Pirates are, it's a clean look.
Mm-hmm.
I just, with the lettering, when I first saw it, I was like, what's Paul Skeens doing in an Arizona Diamondbacks uniform? Like, he doesn't play for them. You know, he hasn't left the Pirates yet. But no, overall, I think it's a really, really good, clean set for everybody.
And now we get to out of left field with Darren Vaught.
From minds that wander off the beaten path.
Here we go.
Unexpected, unscripted, unbelievable.
I like it. It's simple, to the point.
It's the curveball of your day.
Bring the bare necessities of life.
Out of left field with Darren Vaught.
All right, Darren, I'll get us going here. Now, you can't see me right now because you're driving and you're on the phone, but I'm rocking a Reading Rainbow t-shirt that I got at Goodwill.
Okay.
I thought it was pretty sick, pretty rad, and it got me thinking about a good question for today. What was your go-to kids TV show growing up? What was your jam?
Oh, man. This is a long list, probably. Reading Rainbow was one of them.
Yeah.
In the same vein, I loved Bill Nye, the Science Guy.
Yeah.
You get a little bit more into kind of like the action hero boyhood side of it. Like, you know, Power Rangers, the OG. And then, I mean, you know, you get a little bit older and it's like, okay, I watched Saved by the Bell before I caught the bus for school basically every day. So like those are the ones that come to mind. But of course, like some Saturday cartoons, like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles was one that aired a lot, when I was younger. Yeah, no, that's a good enough list. I don't need to yammer on.
That's a banger of a list. I was big on Arthur. Arthur was my jam growing up. Every day, 4:30, I cut on Arthur. That was it. And then Mr. Rogers in the morning. That's what we did. And then that led into Reading Rainbow. Don't ask me why. I still remember the TV slate. Morgan, what was your go-to TV shows as a kid?
I loved Crocodile Hunter with Steve Irwin.
That's a good option.
That was a good one. I watched a lot of like classic cartoons, like the Jetsons, Flintstones, and the Smurfs on Saturday mornings. Tom and Jerry, actually. Tom and Jerry was top tier.
Tom and Jerry.
Love Tom and Jerry.
I'll second that. I'll second that one, Morgan. My parents love to tell the story. You guys know I'm a twin brother.
Yeah.
So my twin and I were born at like early in the morning, right? Like one of those weird birth times you see, like 3 or 4 a.m., that kind of thing. And apparently, my mom, while birthing us, had Tom and Jerry on in the hospital. So we often get sort of tied to that show as if it's part of our identity. But we watched it a lot as kids, too. So that, yeah, Tom and Jerry belongs on my list.
I love that. I could watch that show for hours. Darren, what do you have for out of left field today?
All right. So last time I was on, we talked about some TV shows, and I recommended Shrinking on Apple TV for you guys.
Yes.
So the season three finale, aired earlier this week, or it came out earlier this week.
Right.
And I'm man enough to admit, when I get a little misty-eyed watching a TV show, teared up a little bit with this finale. It was a feeler. It was a real feeler, guys.
Wow.
To which I ask, when was the last time you cried?
Oh, me. Probably.
There's too much of a stigma around this, guys. We gotta be out there and upfront with it, right?
I agree.
We gotta encourage it.
I agree. I've got to be very secure in our emotions as men. That's what we have to do. Men can cry all the time. I would probably say the last time I genuinely cried was when Han Solo was killed in Star Wars. I think, spoiler alert, it's been out for over a decade, so you'll be all right. Yeah, that one got me a little teary-eyed, I'd have to say. Morgan, what do you have an answer to this? Well, you have to, because you've cried before, so when was the last time?
So Monday evening, Michigan won the national championship, and a few tears may have been shed.
Yeah, he's a diehard Michigan fan, Darren.
There you go. See, like we've got some joy, we've got some plucking on heartstrings. It's applicable in so many situations. That's great. Fantastic.
It really is. Morgan, very quickly, what do you have for us in out of left field?
Rory had his Masters dinner the other day.
Yeah.
It's two appetizers, a light main and more of like a second main, like your main dish. What do you have for that, Darren? Two appetizers, a light main, and a real main.
See, this is one that over the years we've kind of batted around on Masters Week. I think you separate it into the tiers, and that makes it a little more difficult for me because, like, I kind of, Morgan, I want to go like a little simple with the Masters dinner, like, part of me, Will's heard me explain this, part of me just wants to be like, hey, let's just get a bunch of New York style pizza and just like, yeah, just make sure it's good, and but have a lot of pizza and then like donuts for dessert. I just would like to demystify Augusta a little bit with that menu selection. So I'd have to put a little more thought into like a, you know, a light entree and then a main entree and really divvying it up like that.
That's still an amazing
I think
answer.
The pizza and the donuts crushes it. That's the whole point. Like me, I went with, I don't even remember what I had in the entire menu that I did, but I had like breakfast foods because I'm a big breakfast guy. So,
master's brunch would chill. That would be awesome.
Like breakfast, I think I had a breakfast pizza or breakfast nachos or something where you put like eggs. Was it breakfast nachos? Okay. With it's like scrambled eggs on it, melted cheese, sausage, maybe one half is sausage, the other's bacon. You just go all out with the breakfast, Darren.
I just want a mean stack of pancakes, an omelet station, you know, like waffles. I'm in on breakfast for dinner at the Masters.
Love it. And that's been Out of Left Field with Darren Vaught. Darren, heading up the road. Be safe going up there to Raleigh, and we'll be listening to you on the call. Stanford at Louisville, ACC Network, 1 o'clock on Sunday. We'll catch you then, and we'll do it again next time.
Sounds good. Thanks, Jen. Appreciate you guys as always.
There he goes, Darren Vaught of ESPN. We've had the latest statue disaster. It's fitting that we're talking baseball right now. Did you see this?
I did just see this.
See, I wish I had the video for you here, but maybe I could pull it up in time. But essentially what it is Ichiro is the latest to get himself a statue. And in Seattle, as it was being unveiled, and as the sheet, whatever they put on it, was coming down, like, okay, what's his iconic stance? It's the bat in front. That's Ichiro. That's his logo. And as the sheet comes down off of this statue, the bat bends and breaks and is just like laying flimsy there. Like still attached to the statue, but it's like bent over. And it's, how do you screw that up? It's the most iconic part of the statue is the bat, the stance. Ichiro deserves better.
He does.
When are we going to get these statues right? When are we going to get them right? Oh, jeez.
They got Peyton Manning's bust right at the Hall of Fame. They gave him a big enough forehead.
This is true. Well, I tell you what. If you're not driving right now, as you're going on X to look up the video that I'm describing to you, you know what you should also do? Go on our socials and take a look at it. See what I did there. WSJS Radio on X. WSJS Radio on Instagram. The Drive with Will Dalton on YouTube. We also have a best of podcast, The Drive with Will Dalton, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your pods, where we compile the best stuff of the show. It's where you can find us. We appreciate a subscribe, like, comment, engage with us. We would appreciate that. I'm sure Ichiro doesn't appreciate his statue being screwed up.